part of our counter programming, we are doing deep dives. We did one midweek on Brett Favre, which was a blast. I did one last hour on Tiger Woods. As part of both those deep dives, we are bringing in somebody to lend another point of view. Joining us right now is a golf analyst. He is author of Unplayable, an inside account of Tiger's most tumultuous season. He is a friend of the program. He is Robert Lucetich. Robert, it's great to have you back. How are you?
Jim, always good to be back. And sorry for the surreal little delay we had earlier. I don't know what happened, but these are strange times that we are living in.
My friend, not a problem at all. These are very strange times that we are living in. I'm just glad that we could spend some time together. So I did a deep dive last hour, Robert, and the final chapter of your book, Unplayable, is titled The Reckoning, and it opens with Tiger Woods in Australia for the Australian Masters in November of 2009. Elin had stayed back in Orlando, but Tiger's mom was with him, and the routine was he'd have dinner with his mom, she'd go to her room, and then he'd hang out with Rachel Yucatel. For those who do not remember, who is Rachel Yucatel, and how would you describe her relationship with Tiger?
Well, Rachel Yucatel at that point in time was Tiger's girlfriend, one of, I should say. But she had a little bit, she was sort of, more equal among the, sort of more important among the flock, because she had known him for a long time, and she had worked. People that don't know her, she actually became somewhat well known the day after 9/11 because her fiance died in New York in the attacks, and she was on the front page of the New York Post, ironically. But Rachel was a sort of a social fixer in a lot of ways, you could probably say. And she had put together parties and events and whatnot, had known Tiger for a long time. And I think my instinct tells me that she may have known where some of the skeletons were hanging in the closet.
Robert Lucetich is joining us. We can work our way back to that. But for context, how long had Tiger been carrying on Triss at that point? And what's your sense as to when that started?
Well, I mean, I think it had been going on for years, certainly well before his marriage. I think that, as one of his camp said to me one time, he didn't really look at it as anything but recreation, like going to the gym. And he kept that point of view. I think that if you go back, and one of the really formative moments in Tiger's life came when IMG and Nike, who were obviously both intimately connected with him, were looking around for what would be next after Michael Jordan. And Tiger Woods was very much a candidate, an obvious candidate. And so they thought maybe MJ could teach Tiger the ropes a little bit. And so they set up a meeting, and MJ said, "Wait for me after a game at the in Chicago." And Tiger waited, and MJ picked him up, and they spent the night at a riverboat casino. And I think Tiger started to learn that there's a lot of things you can do in this life, and with this level of fame and notoriety and wealth, and I think he went down that road. And I think we all know that his father was quite the ladies' man, or at least he liked the idea of being one. And so these influences, you know, they really came at an early age. We're talking right, essentially when he turned pro. So he was in his early 20s, and I think that the part of him that wanted to get married, the other part of him, which is the part that was indulged, wanted to continue having this life. And he really, in a lot of ways, he lived his life. He was incredible at compartmentalizing his life. And so this was just a compartment, and it had really nothing to do in his mind with his marriage, his children, and that part of his life.
We're talking to Robert Lucetich, journalist. He is the author of Unplayable, an inside account of Tiger's most tumultuous season. You know, I want to get to that point about him putting things in boxes or compartmentalizing, but you could tell it had been connected, Robert, with a couple of women in Vegas, Jennifer Lee Madden and Ashley Sampson. These two women went to the National Enquirer with info about Yucatel and Woods. How much does this entire story have its roots in Yucatel snubbing Sampson one night at a Japanese restaurant in Vegas?
Well, this is honestly, I'm sure, you know, the whole world's been watching the Tiger King show, and you think, how weird is this? Well, let me tell you something. This Tiger King story is just as weird as anything you'll see from Joe Exotic. So,
well done.
Rachel Lukatel put together let's call it a trip with some girls from Vegas to meet some guys from London who were wealthy guys. Two of the girls from Vegas didn't quite get what it was about. They just thought it would be, we'll go to Spain, we'll have this great life, and we'll have a lot of fun. And they didn't realize that there was a quid pro quo. They ended up going back to Vegas. She put him on a plane. The whole thing was a disaster. She gets back to Vegas and happens to see these two, and they're sort of mending fences at a Japanese restaurant in Vegas. And who else happens to be in that restaurant but Jeremy Piven? Which is quite appropriate because this whole thing looks like it's a storyline from Entourage. And she sits with Jeremy Piven and essentially blows off the other two. And these two girls, very miffed, think to themselves, you know what? We're gonna call the National Enquirer and we're gonna tell them all about Tiger and Rachel Lukatel. And the irony of the whole thing is that the National Enquirer, to my knowledge, paid them $25,000, which they shared, and I'd say the Tiger might have paid them just a little bit more to keep their mouths shut. And that, in fact, started the whole story, because after this, and you've got to remember that there was history between Tiger and the National Enquirer. Beforehand, a few years beforehand, they had what Tiger thought was photographs of him with another woman, but what Tiger didn't know and Tiger's camp didn't know was that the photographs were very grainy. They weren't very clear. So the Enquirer, being clever people that they are, cut a deal so Tiger would do a cover story for one of their other titles, Men's Fitness. And I remember at the time thinking, why is Tiger doing, he doesn't do anything for free, or certainly anything for, you know, without having a reason. And I thought, why would he do the cover of Men's Fitness? It just didn't make any sense. Well, that was the reason. The reason was that the Enquirer agreed to essentially hush up this evidence they had of an affair of another woman in return for this cover. So now fast forward, the Enquirer is now back at it, but this time they've got their teeth into a much better story, and they send one of their reporters down to Melbourne at the Crown Casino, which is quite opulent in Melbourne. Tiger was there to play the Australian Masters. And the reporter waited until he saw Lukatel, walked into the elevator, and waited for her to produce the key to the 35th floor, which there are only two penthouse suites on that floor. And he knew Tiger was in one of them. And as soon as she did, he confronted her. And, of course, she said that she didn't know what he was talking about. But by then, it was too late, and they started putting together, in fact, really, Rachel herself was responsible for putting together a sort of a crisis PR strategy. And one of the mistakes that they made was that Tiger told Elin, his then wife, that the Enquirer would be producing a story and it was just all nonsense and it was false. And if he'd have left it there, and this is one of the things about this story that it always blows my mind, is that all of these things had to happen, and they had to happen in a very particular order. So it was a perfect storm, but it was a perfect storm with the correct sequencing. If Tiger had just said, this is nonsense and, you know, just another BS story, I think Elin would have just believed that, because she already believed that the tabloids just made stories up. But instead, to sell it, he put her on the phone with Rachel Lukatel, who has a very raspy, sort of a husky, too many cigarettes late at night voice. And she spoke to her for 20 minutes, and Rachel said, this is just a couple of girls trying to get even with me, and they're being vindictive, and it's got nothing to do with Tiger. And of course, we fast forward a couple of days to Thanksgiving, and when Elin's wondering who Tiger would have called so late at night, and she dials that number. Well, she recognized the voice.
Robert Lucetich is joining us, and that's exactly what happened. He went to play poker with some friends. He returns home. He calls her. The number is saved under a different name. Elin calls that and recognizes the voice. You know, Robert, there's always been that rumor that she hit Tiger with a golf club. What is your sense as to the likelihood of whether or not that's true? Where do you come out?
Oh, I think it probably was true. I mean, it was what I was told from a pretty good source is that she threw his phone at him. You've got to remember, Tiger had taken Ambien, so he was very, very dazed and confused, half asleep, and they're having an argument. What I was told was that she threw his phone at him and that it hit him in the lip and chipped his tooth. And in the coming days after this, Tiger was not available for any police interviews. And the reason he wasn't, it was because that he had flown from the hospital in Orlando to Phoenix to see a plastic surgeon to get his tooth fixed and his lip fixed. And so again, it's one of these stories that just, it spiraled out of control. And one of the things that really strikes me is just how unprepared and how just completely inadequate his agent, Mark Steinberg, and the team around him were. They just couldn't deal with it. And Tiger, in the end, ends up essentially going into hiding, which was facilitated by his old friend Arnold Palmer. He was who gave him a place to stay and lay low, and he literally changed his phone number and just didn't pick up the phone. But as Hank Haney would tell me about a year or so later, you know, Tiger would read Radar Online, and not only read the stories, he'd read the comments, which is only going to make you insane, I think.
For the life of me, I can't even imagine why somebody in that position would do something like that. Robert Lucetich is joining us. His book is called Unplayable, an inside account of Tiger's most tumultuous season, and joining us to break this whole thing down. To your point, how you could read those articles, much less the comments, is unbelievable. But to your other point about his team and how badly they handled this, the lip impacted the way he spoke. So instead of getting in front of a camera, he was issuing statements on his website. How bad of a strategy was that at that time?
Well, I mean, it's let's go back to Joe Exotic. I think you'd rather have him in charge. I mean, it was a nightmare. It was a free for all, and they never got ahead of the story. They never understood the way the media works. When you've got choppers overhead, you've got news helicopters overhead. There's no point hiding. You've got to come out. You've got to get in front of it. And it took them so long to understand that. And you've got to remember that they've always only dealt pretty much with the golf media, and the golf media was just far more, I would say, compliant in a sense where, you know, you ask for an interview, they say no, and you say okay. Well, that's not going to work with the National Enquirer. That's not going to work when you've got helicopters overhead and you've got a beast that needs feeding, and they just completely underestimated the impact of the story, the bigness of the story. I mean, it's Thanksgiving weekend. There's not a lot going on. This is the story. And they just thought, well, if we just issue some statements and we just don't say anything, it will go away. And honestly, I think if you're go to universities across America, maybe even the world now, under Crisis Management 101, how not to do it, Tiger Woods 2009.
So let me ask you this before you go. Like, if it broke a little bit differently, if one of the sources of the Enquirer story was not offended by Yucatel snubbing her, if Tiger's team could get to any of these people, including Jamie Grubbs, before she went to Us Weekly, or if they had paid off any of these people, is it possible this story never happens?
It's very possible. I really think that it is possible. I think that, let's think about, you know, how many times, you know, we know what we know because it ends up getting leaked, but how close are we to never knowing it? And this was definitely, I mean, we didn't know 2 years before when the Enquirer had him, they thought they had him red-handed, and nothing ever came out. So yeah, there's a lot of things if he had a Beverly Hills lawyer who was essentially a Ray Donovan character with bags filled with money going to women, and Tiger would have to write down the names of all these women, and they'd try and find them, and they'd try and get their cell phones, their laptops, and give them money. I mean, it's just, it's crazy.
Ray Donovan would have fixed that for sure. So finally, Tiger goes to rehab, and then in February he speaks to his family, friends, and business acquaintances at the PGA Tour headquarters. Leave us with this thought. As you think back on that speech, what do you remember most about it?
I mean, the desperation that he wanted this over with and done, and that I just... Part of me thinks that he did feel at the time that he felt, you know, some level of sorrow and contrition. But I think most of it, I think Tiger's a different guy now. I think Tiger's a more mature person. And I think in a lot of ways, he's not as indulged as he was. But back then, I was thinking to myself, you know, he's doing this because he wants it to go away. And I'm not sure how honest it really was. But again, I think that, you know, we all grow in different ways. His life is a life that none of us could know, because, you know, when you're told you're special and you're the next Gandhi and, you know, all of this stuff, it has an impact, and you don't think that the rules apply to you. And Tiger felt back then that he was bulletproof. And I think that, you know, we've seen a different Tiger now. And I think that DUI from a couple of years ago really was rock bottom. And that, I think that changed him more than anything. But, you know, it certainly was, when you look back on it, just one of the more incredible stories. And certainly I was writing a book on Tiger at the time, and I had to write that last chapter as it was happening. And, it was quite something.
It's an absolutely amazing time. It's an amazing book. It is called Unplayable, an inside account of Tiger's most tumultuous season. Robert, there was no way I did a deep dive on that period without running you down to talk about it. I appreciate it so much. It's great to have you back on the show, and I will look forward to doing it again soon. Robert, thank you very much.
It's always good to talk to you, Rami. Cheers.
You too, Robert. Cheers. Well done. One of my favorite guys to talk to. Golf analyst, journo, Robert Lucetich.